He okay? Amy asked.
Wes said, he's just tired. Amy's husband ushered her into the Crown Imperial, and as they walked inside, you could hear Amy giggle.
I was like, why does that guy have a dog?
West fiddled with an unlit cigarette. Hell of a first night, you said. He looked at you and you offered him a sad smile, but he didn't smile back. This is the worst, he said, his eyes all red. This is the fucking worst. Fact. On Sunday, Wes started drinking early. You spent the whole day with him, pretty much, just sitting on the beach, staring at the water. At one point, your mom came by and asked if she could join you, and Wes said, yeah, I don't know, June, it's pretty crowded over here, you might have better luck by the pool. And she said, okay, I can take a hint, and walked away, smiling tightly. Wes looked at you and winced. You must think I'm a real asshole. And you did, kind of, but also,
no, I get it.
It's not even her, really. It's him that pisses me off. Sure, that makes sense, you lied. It did not make sense. Fact. Your father was the kindest, most conflict-averse person you knew, and it was hard to imagine him pissing anybody off. Sometimes, when he got overcharged at a restaurant, he'd pay the full bill, just because he'd rather spend the money than have to get into an argument. I mean, what Dad did to me and my mom, you can't just paper over that shit with a free trip to Mexico. What did he do? He was an asshole, is what he did. No, but specifically, people outgrow me, he said, in the same blasé tone one might say, that is a tall building. He picked up a stick and chucked it into the water. Everyone who ever loves me one day outgrows me. It was unclear whether he was answering your question or trying to change the subject, but either way you felt like you should say something, so you said, I won't outgrow you. And he said, yeah, you will, because if you don't, that just means you're as fucked up in the brain as I am. And he chuckled softly to himself, and he looked over at you and gave you a crooked smile, the kind of crooked smile you'd previously seen only on your father and yourself. And in that moment, your heart just about melted. In fact, you had never in your life wanted anything as much as you now wanted to be, immediately and forever, as fucked up in the brain as your brother was. Why don't you take your shirt off at the beach? You asked. West shook his head. I burn real easy. I get super pink. Did you know flamingos get pink because of the food they eat? They eat a lot of shrimp, which makes their feathers grow in like that. Huh? Wes spun his head to look at you, violently confused. Oh, shit. Is this because I said you were smart last night, and now you have to, like, be the smart one all the time? You know, that's the problem with teenagers. You decide what you are, and then, like, you can't be anything else. No, that's not... That exact mentality fucked me up when I was a kid, because I convinced myself I was an alcoholic. So for, like, 5 years, I never drank. Or if I did drink, I drank a lot, you know, because if I was already drinking, I might as well be that guy that everyone already thought I was. But then one day, I was just like, what the fuck am I doing? And now I just drink and it's not a big deal, you know? And you said, I'm sorry, I just really like facts. Oh, yeah? Wes squinted at you over his sunglasses and you found new corners of yourself to sink into. He took a final drag off his cigarette and threw the butt in the sand. I've got a fact for you. You know elephants? And you said, yeah, as if he were actually asking whether you knew what elephants were. Well, elephants have really sensitive feet. Did you know that? You shook your head. They can feel things coming from miles away. They can feel a stampede or whatever from the vibrations in the ground. And they actually communicate with each other that way, from like way the hell off through vibrations in the ground. I like to think about that whenever I'm far away from people. You know, it's like, whenever you get lost, just remember to keep your feet on the ground. That's really nice, he said. But I don't believe you. And he laughed and said, why not? You took a sip from your virgin daiquiri and said, I think you're a liar. Let's ask her, Wes said, nodding at a skinny but wide-hipped girl in a red and white striped two-piece walking along the beach. You'd noticed the skinny but wide-hipped girl at the resort before. The previous night at the bar, she sat by herself at a nearby table while West gave you a lecture on early 90s grunge music. You could feel her looking at you. You could feel her trying not to look at you. And you felt like how Aaron Tyler must have felt at that sleepover party when she told the story about visiting her cousin in San Francisco during Fleet Week and letting the sailor touch her breasts in the parking lot of the Whole Foods. The event itself was not all that exciting or romantic, but you never know it from the giggling envy it brought out in the other girls. You'd wish those other girls could see you with West. Wish they could trade places with a skinny but wide-hipped girl and see you holding court with this man 8 years your senior, this overflowing mess of an adult. And now, the skinny but wide-hipped girl was walking past you, and very obviously, to you at least, trying not to betray how desperately she wanted to be invited into your private club. West got up and jogged toward her, forgetting apparently how much his foot was supposed to hurt, and you shouted, laughing, "Don't talk to him, he's a liar!" Wes said to the girl, "Can I talk to you for a minute?" "I heard you're a liar," she said, and he shrugged and said, "That's a risk you'll have to take. Hey, how old are you anyway?"
"How old am I?"
"Yeah, I mean, don't you know?" And she sized him up and said, "I'm 18. And Wes said, "Great, that's perfect." Her name was Jordan. She was visiting from Denver with her grandparents, and her twin younger brothers she affectionately referred to as the Booger Patrol. She had a boyfriend back home, Clark, and she had never heard the thing about the elephant's feet. "I swear to God, I thought there was no one at the resort my age," she said to West, "even though you were the one who was her age. I've been going up and down the beach. Everyone here is either a little kid or an old man. You tried to place Jordan, using the girls from your high school as references. She was a little bit Katie Connor, with Stephanie Pearson's nervous laugh, and Sarah Stone's seeming inability to shut up about starting at Northwestern in the fall."
"Northwestern's perfect for me because it's, like, in the city, but it's not in the city, so you kind of get the best of both worlds."
West rolled his eyes and took a drag from his cigarette. "Cool, have a great time in college." "What's wrong with college?" Jordan asked. He shook his head. "Nothing. A lot of really rich and outwardly successful people went to college." You found that stupidly hilarious, and you let out a surprised chortle. You weren't sure if you were laughing at him or laughing at her, but you knew they didn't know either, and you found that fact even more weirdly hilarious. And when West left to take a leak in the ocean, because those kids are just asking to get peed on, Jordan said, "What's the story with your stepbrother?" And you said, "What's his story?" And she said, "Yeah, I mean, is he always like that?" And you said, "Actually, West is my half-brother." And she said, "Oh, sorry." Monday you spent on the beach. Jordan found you after breakfast. "The Booger Patrol was being a real pain in the ass this morning," she said, opening a Corona. "Yeah," West said, "little siblings are the worst," and he winked at you. Jordan squinted at the horizon. "Do you want to go in the water?" "Yeah," you said. "You two go," said West. "I'll watch." Jordan ran ahead and dove into a wave. You waded in after her. "Don't splash me," you said, and then immediately felt stupid. "I mean, don't splash me on purpose." Jordan dunked her head and popped back up. "Did you see those college guys that are staying here? What's their story?" You shrugged. "I think they're in a frat or something." She nodded thoughtfully, taking in the information and mulling it over like the key to some puzzle. "Some of them are pretty cute. We should set you up with one." "I don't know. They seem kind of dumb." Jordan cackled. "Yeah, but it's not like you're gonna marry them. If they're dumb, that's actually even better because you'll spend less time talking and more time hooking up." You looked back at the shore. West, true to his word, was watching you. "Besides," she said, "I already have a boyfriend, so I have to live vicariously through you." On Tuesday, the family went ziplining. West declined because his foot was still sore, but even if it wasn't, he wouldn't have gone because A, fuck that noise, and B, are you fucking kidding me? The excursion was fun but cheesy. This was the jungle where they filmed Predator, a plaque explained, so all the ziplines were named after Arnold Schwarzenegger movies. As for West, he mostly just fucked around on the beach, not that it's any of your business. Did Jordan come by? Yeah, she might have. A lot of people came by. Who gives a shit? He met up with you and your parents for dinner at a place in town your mother had heard was very authentic.
The food was good, but you just about died from embarrassment when your mother kept trying to order in Spanish. After the waiter left, you leaned in and whispered, "Mom, that guy probably speaks better English than you do."
"Well, I'm here in Mexico. I want to practice my Spanish."
"You can't just talk to Mexicans in Spanish. It's racist."
Your father rolled his eyes. "Oh, come on. How is it racist?"
"It just feels kind of racist," you said.
"She's right, June," said West, mouth full of beans. "It's super racist."
And your mother said, "If we were in Paris, I would be speaking to the waiters in French."
"Yeah, but that's different."
"How is that different?" said your father.
You weren't sure.
It feels like you're being condescending.
And your father said, "I think you're bringing some assumptions to the table that are unfair."
West turned toward you. "He's got a good point. Maybe you're the one being racist," he said, mouth full of beans.
Your waiter returned to the table, and your mother said, "Sergio, did it make you uncomfortable when I spoke to you in Spanish earlier?"
Sergio's face got very serious.
"Uncomfortable? No."
"Would you rather customers speak to you in English?"
"English? Spanish?
It's all okay.
No problem either way."
After the meal, your mom wanted to see the history show, this circusy spectacular in a nearby village.
West leaned back. "Yeah, I'm kinda not really into all that touristy bullshit."
And your dad said, "Oh, because sitting on the beach and drinking cocktails isn't touristy?"
And West let out a single cackle.
"Ha!"
And then said, "No, but seriously, I don't want to go to any dumbass history show."
"I'm kind of exhausted after the ziplining," you said. "Maybe I'll stick around the resort with West."
Your mother shot your dad a glance, but he didn't even notice.
"Are you sure, honey?" she said. "The show actually doesn't seem that touristy, the way the brochure describes it. I think it could actually be a really genuine cultural experience."
Wes said, "No means no, June. Give it a rest."
And you said, "Actually, you know what? Maybe I will go."
It was a big arena show with a cast of hundreds in an old wooden stadium. The whole thing was in Spanish, but it was pretty easy to make out what was going on. A breathless rundown of everything that had ever happened, from the Mayans and other early settlers all the way up to the present.
It wasn't bad. You were glad you went.
Your mom seemed happy you were there, so even just for that.
On the cab ride back to the Crown Imperial, you thought about what it would be like to grow up in Puerto Vallarta. You imagined yourself going to the history show as a Mexican child. It was something every kid did, like how kids in the U.S. go to Six Flags or the Holocaust Museum. You'd go all the time. You'd practically have the whole thing memorized. You imagined going back one last time before you left for college. "Come on, Elena," you'd say to your beautiful and glamorous Mexican best friend. "It'll be fun." And she'd say, "The history show? Are you kidding me?"
The two of you would sit in the back and make jokes the whole time. "Oh, so now the Aztecs and the Spaniards are friends? Yeah, that's exactly how it happened."
At the end of the night, though, when the lights lit up the stage like the Mexican flag, and the entire audience was singing, you'd shut up. After the show, your mother would ask you where you'd been. "Elena and I went to the history show." She wouldn't get that you did it kind of as a joke and kind of for real, the way 18-year-olds do everything, and she would hold you close and whisper in your ear, "Oh, Heather," or whatever the Spanish equivalent of Heather is, "promise me you'll never forget who you are." As you were falling asleep that night, you thought about your imaginary best friend Elena and your imaginary Mexican mother, and how neither could quite understand what was so poignant to you about the Mexican history show. And you thought about how even though this scenario was made up, there was something so truthful about it because, fact, the things that are the most important aren't shared. They are important only to us. The way your mother rolls her eyes at you, your sudden desire to stop eating red meat, the immediate, unexplainable sadness you felt when you saw your father's shirt draped over the back of a chair. You can write it all down, you can put it in your book of facts, but the truth is no one can ever really understand the tangle of experiences and passions that makes you who you are. It's a secret collection, a private language, a pebble in your pocket that you play with when you're anxious. Hard as geometry, smooth as soap. Even a kiss between two people stolen backstage on the opening night of your middle school's production of The Music Man. Peeking through the curtains, Harold Hill whispered to you, the mayor's wife, "I'm so nervous." And then he said, "We're going to remember this moment forever, aren't we?" And before you could answer, He kissed you quickly and softly on the mouth. He kissed you so gently, as if you were a paper crane, as if you were a creature made of tissue that would fall apart in the wind. And afterward he looked at you, and then he whispered, "Oh." Even that shared experience, its true significance anyway, what it really means, that belongs to you alone.
"Shh, you're gonna wake up Heather."
It was Jordan who said this, in your hotel room, waking you briefly in the middle of the night. But when she did, you couldn't understand how that was possible. You were positive you must have dreamed it. You woke up on Wednesday and the shower was running. West was in his bed, and you were in your bed, and the shower was running. There was a bra on the floor, and it wasn't your bra, and some clothes, and a clutch, and West was asleep in a long-sleeve t-shirt, and the shower was running, and you got up and walked over to the bathroom, and the shower stopped, and Jordan walked out in a towel and smiled at you and whispered, "Hey." "Why are you here?" you said, and she offered you a cartoon grimace and said, "Sorry, awkward." And you said, "No, why are you here, Jordan?" "I don't know, we were having fun last night, and West asked if I wanted to come back up to the room, and I said yes. Where were you last night?" "What about Clark?" you said, and she said, "I know, I feel kind of bad about that, but we're probably going to break up when I get to Northwestern anyway. And besides, it's not like I cheated on him. West and I didn't do anything. We just cuddled and kissed a little bit." When she said this, you must have made some face, because then she said, "I don't know why you're giving me a hard time about this. West and I have a real connection. I'm sorry if that makes you jealous or whatever because you have some weird crush on him." And you said, "Ew, he's my brother." And she said, "Yeah, exactly. Ew." And you said, "I can't, I'm not..." And West grunted and rolled over and looked up at the two of you in the doorway and kind of smiled and winced at the same time and said, "Well, if it isn't my two favorite ladies." At this point, you knew that if you didn't leave the room immediately, you might accidentally slash on purpose claw someone's eyes out. So you grabbed your key card and went down to the dining room. You met your mother down there, who frowned when she saw you and said, "You really should change out of your pajamas before coming down to breakfast." That morning, you went snorkeling with your father. West had already politely declined the invitation. And in the afternoon, you and your parents took a 2-hour bus ride to look at some ruins. How were the ruins? They were adequately ruined. Everything was ruined. "You're on your own for dinner," your mother said, and you had a burrito at the poolside cafe. That night, West didn't come back to the room. You read your dumb book about high school girls in New York. It was stupid and dumb, but you wanted to know what happened. On Thursday, you had a plan. Jordan would be gone on an all-day boat excursion with her grandparents and the Booger Patrol, so you'd have West all to yourself. You'd sit with West on the beach just like everything was normal, only everything wasn't normal, and he would know it. West would try to cut the tension by saying something dumb, and then you would say something smart, and West would try to deflect this by saying something like "tsh" or "psh," and you wouldn't let it rest. You would say, "Oh yeah, psh," and West would groan and say, "It's too early, I'm not drunk enough to be charming." And you would say, "You're not charming enough to be a drunk." And West would frown and say something ridiculous like, "You shouldn't be so clever, it's bad for your skin." And you would just take a sip from your daiquiri and say, "Okay," in a tone all at once off the cuff and demolishing. And that would really make him feel stupid. That would just about destroy him. Fact: you didn't see West all day Thursday. At one point, your father found you reading your book by the side of the pool and said, "Where's West?" And you shrugged and mumbled, "How should I know? I barely even know the guy." And your father said, "Okay." He started to walk away, but then you said, "And by the way, it is supremely weird that you would make me share a room with this 26-year-old man I don't know." And your father said, "Come on, you know West, you grew up with him. He moved out when I was 6. Your father rolled his eyes. "So you want your own room, like you have at home? Is that what this is about?" "No, Dad, because lots of people share rooms with their siblings. I shared a room with my sister until I went to college." "No, it's not about that. I just think it's kind of fucked up that this vacation is the first time I'm meeting him." "It's not the first time since I was 6. First of all, please watch your language," he said, Second of all, what you might not understand is that West has done a lot of growing up in the last 10 years. Your mother and I did what was best for you. If you'd gotten to know him when you were younger, I don't think you would have liked him very much. And you said, yeah, well, I hardly like him now.
Well, I'm sorry you feel that way, but you're not getting your own room. These rooms are very expensive. Fact. Your father was kind of an asshole.
Friday morning, you woke up to find West lying face down in his bed in a pair of boxer shorts and a long-sleeved t-shirt, the sheet half off the mattress. You were going to leave without saying anything because, honestly, what was there to say? But then he flopped around on the bed, and you couldn't tell if he was waking up or if it was just like gas escaping from a bloated corpse. And like a sick thing looking for a place to die, the question crawled out of his mouth. Are you coming to the beach today? And you said, where have you been? You tried to sound casual when you said it, and then immediately hated yourself for trying to sound casual, as if you owed him that. And he groaned, you know, around. Come to the beach. Is Jordan going to be there?
Jesus, I don't know.
And you said, where have you been? But this time you said it really seriously, so he would know that you were really serious. And he said, what, just because we hung out for a couple days, now we gotta do everything together? And you said, what is your deal? Why did you even come here? And he said, I came here to sit on the beach and get drunk. Why did you come here? And you said, I came here to see you. You thought that would shut him up, but you were starting to discover, fact, the men in your family didn't shut up. Oh, really? Is that why you keep going on little outings with your parents? And you said, you know, my parents are the ones who are paying for us to be here. These rooms are very expensive. And he said, oh, good, yeah, so I guess everything's settled then. I guess they didn't fuck me up when I was a kid because now they're letting me tag along on their expensive vacation. I don't know why you're taking it out on me. None of that is my fault. You think I want to get into this shit? I just wanted to go to the beach. And you put your hands on your hips and said, okay, let's go to the beach. And he said, no, now you're being a brat. Are you on like 5 different periods right now or what? You went to the beach. And Jordan was there, waiting. Wes got a beer and Jordan got a beer. And every few minutes they would start giggling for no reason, it seemed. And you would say, what's so funny? And Wes would say, nothing, it's stupid. And Jordan would say, it's an inside joke. Then your mother walked by and asked if you wanted to get a massage at the resort spa, and you said, yes. How was the massage? It was fine, whatever, it was great, thanks, Mom. Later you found West at the poolside bar, talking to the woman who had gotten out of the cab with her husband that first night, the drunk woman who thought it was so funny that there was a dog. West smiled at you. Hey, Heather, you remember Amy? This is my kid's sister, Heather.
Aw, Amy said. Cute.
West winked at you, and you said, I have to go. That night, you all met up for dinner at a hole-in-the-wall restaurant your mother found on the internet. West had a green bruise on his face that looked like the early stages of a black eye.
Oh my God, what happened to your face? Your mother said.
I got into a fight with a seagull, said West in his signature dry style that made it clear he was joking but unclear what exactly the joke was.
I don't understand, said your father. How did you get in a fight with a seagull?
West shrugged. We got in a fight. We had a difference of opinion, but it's all settled now.
Dinner was fine. You had a quesadilla. At one point, your parents excused themselves, and West said,
that's how you know you've been living with someone too long. You have to go to the bathroom at the same time.
You looked at him. Did Amy's husband do that to your eye? And he said,
why do you always gotta poke at shit, Heather? Why can't you ever just let shit be shit?
And you said, Jesus Christ.
And he said, all night you've been looking at me. You know what that feels like?
And you said, you're mad at me because I looked at you?
And he said, please don't start. I get enough stupid teenager bullshit from Jordan. Believe me, Christ. It's like high school all over again with you two.
And you said, you're the one who slept with her. No one told you to do that. I don't even know what you see in her, honestly. She's a total ditz and she has wide hips.
Wes laughed.
God, you two are exactly the same. You act like you're friends, but you say the meanest shit about each other when the other one's not around.
Your face got hot. It hadn't occurred to you that the two of them had talked about you when you weren't there.
I don't know what you expect from me, he said, and you started, I expect you, but he didn't wait for you to finish. You're just like your mom, you know that? Did you think you were going to come down here and get some real, authentic, genuine experience? What do you think we are? You don't know me. We have these dinners together and everyone acts like we're some kind of family, but we're not a family. We're fucking tourists.
You leaned back in the booth. You got some food on your face. He wiped his face with a napkin. Did I get it?
Yeah.
Your parents came back to the table.
Your father and I thought it might be nice to go salsa dancing tonight, all four of us. We found this place in town where they'll teach you.
I don't think I'm gonna do that, June, said West, pushing a piece of meat around his plate with a tortilla chip. You know, 'cause of my foot and everything.
Your foot is fine, your father snapped. Damn it, we paid for you to fly down here to be with the family, not to sit by yourself on the beach getting drunk all day.
West looked up, and for a second it seemed like he might pick up a plate and chuck it at your father's head. But instead he said, okay, let's go salsa dancing. The salsa dancing was not quite as intimate as you would have liked, or disliked. The instructor had you constantly switching partners, so you danced a little with West, a little with your father, and a little with strangers. You danced mostly with strangers.
That was fun, your mother said, flushed. I thought that was fun.
As your parents debated how much to tip the instructor, you and West wandered outside to get some fresh air and or a cigarette. You stood out on the curb in silence for a minute. West coughed and said, hey, Heather. And you said, yeah. And he said, sometimes I feel like I don't have to tell you things, because I feel like when you look at me, you can see everything. At the time, you didn't say anything because honestly, you didn't have the energy to argue with him anymore. But later you realized this was his best and only attempt at an apology. So, Saturday. When you woke up, West was lying in bed, asleep, with his shirt off. This was the first time you'd seen him with his shirt off. His back and arms, as it turned out, were awash in inscrutable tattoos, faded and scarred. Another mystery that would never be explained. After breakfast, your parents went over the bill with the front desk. My son charged how many drinks to the room? And West carried your luggage out to the curb. He was leaving on a flight later that afternoon, and his plan had been to spend his last few hours on the beach, but now he wasn't so sure. I'm kind of over the whole resort thing, he said. Maybe I'll leave my bags here and just dick around town for a little bit. You thought about your flight home, and you thought about the coming summer. You and Katie Connor had gotten jobs as lifeguards at the city rec center. You were sure she would have a week's worth of gossip to fill you in on, never once asking you about your trip to Puerto Vallarta. Then you thought about college, what your roommate would be like, what classes you'd take, and all the adventures that lay in front of you, as long and complex as the whole long history of Mexico. And Wes said, hey, don't be a stranger, okay? And he looked at you, and he gave you a weak kind of smile and a shrug, as if to say, well, and for some reason, that little nothing was enough to set you off. You started crying, right there in front of the hotel, while the bellhops loaded your bags onto the airport shuttle. You started crying, not because of anything West said or did really, just, you started crying. And West got real uncomfortable, and kind of ignored you for a second, and looked around like there was maybe someone he might know that you were embarrassing him in front of. And he said, hey, come on, you don't need to, that's enough. You tried to stop, but that just made you cry more. And he said, hey, for real, stop it, would you? You're giving me the creeps. Hey, I'm serious. Cut it out. Stop it. Stop it. Please stop it. Please. Please? This last please was too much. And you shook your head and you looked up at him. And he didn't say it, but you could tell he was thinking, yeah, I know.
Lunch with the person who dumped you. Read by Stephanie Beatriz. You get an email from your ex, whatever it was you two were exactly, asking to meet for lunch. The tone of the email is friendly, casual, if a bit stiff. You agree in a friendly, casual, if a bit stiff email of your own and a data set. But what kind of lunch will it be? Hold your breath and spin that wheel! The no hard feelings lunch. This is probably the best case scenario. You can be friends again and put all of this ugliness behind you. You and me, we're okay, right? You'll agree that whatever it was that you had was nice for what it was. But the timing was bad. You wanted different things. You're two different people. After all, it was just one of those things, as Ella Fitzgerald sang, but minus the part about it being a trip to the moon on gossamer wings. You'll offer each other weak declarations that there are no bad guys here because there aren't, not really. And half-hearted promises that you're not reviled by each other's friends, that there haven't been long, heated conversations about how much you suck. Most important, though, is the unspoken understanding that both of you are people. Weak, wounded, fragile, forgivable people, doing the very best you can under the impossible circumstance that is day-to-day existence. In the great grand scheme of things, this is nothing, this wound. It's a nick of a razor, a scrape of the knee. And if you say it enough times and with enough vehemence and smile wider each time you say it, you can even convince yourselves. After all, what were you hoping for, really? What was this ever going to be, realistically? Isn't this the best thing that could have possibly happened for it to have ended now before somebody really got hurt? This is much better. This makes sense. Everything's fine. You can assure each other and yourselves. Everything will always be fine. The loaded weapon lunch. Are you prepared for this? Do you have a list with bullets ready to go? The breakup was abrupt. Maybe you didn't say everything you wanted to say to each other. Maybe now, with time, you started to realize all the ways in which you were wronged. I hope you're crafting the righteous indignation in your head, shaping it, sculpting it. What's the sharpest turn of phrase, the cruelest, fastest way to draw blood? When the sparring begins, hang back, float like a butterfly. Let your opponent use up all the good material, then strike. Remember, the one who laughs last laughs longest, so make sure you laugh last, and when you do laugh, heartily, but with a detached air of, none of this really matters, I haven't been lying awake at night staring at the ceiling regurgitating all this pain, coolness. This lunch will decide, once and for all, who is the winner and who is the loser of this breakup. This is the moment you've been training for, the reckoning where at long last justice will be had. The crowd roars. The judge pounds the gavel. Oh, glorious retribution, how sweet thy taste, how bitter thy sting. This will not be pleasant, this lunch, and you will both feel terrible afterward. It will not at all provide the closure either of you had hoped for. But if there's a silver lining here, and you're not sure there is one, it's the assurance that what you had, whatever it was, had weight. It made an impact. You can put to rest the fear that you were a blip in this other person's life, a footnote. What you did was important. You hurt somebody, and somebody hurt you. The reconciliation lunch. The tail between the legs apology lunch. The tearful, I miss you, I made a horrible mistake, can we please get back together lunch. It probably isn't this, but you should maybe have a plan just in case. Because if it is this, if your former lover has indeed decided that the wasteland that was your relationship is more attractive than the wasteland that is being alone, you have a couple options and you should consider them both ahead of time. Option A is yes, yes, yes. You can attack that yes with desperate vigor, charge blindly, romantically, hysterically into yes. Take a match to your pride and turn back the clock and pretend this breakup never occurred. You were fools, both of you. You were different people then. You were children. You can make it work this time because now you'll know what it is you could have lost. You're really going to try this time. You swear it. This time you'll do everything not in shades of beige and gray, but in bright, bold, brilliant, beautiful color. But then again, maybe you've done a lot of thinking since your split. Maybe you've seen the foolishness of throwing yourself so recklessly headlong into the fray that is this other person. Maybe this was just the splash of cold water that you needed. I mean, let's be realistic after all. This is the question, and you should have a plan. Do you welcome back love with open arms, or do you, under the auspices of rational thinking, break this person's heart like this person broke yours? You should have a plan. But don't get your hopes up. The lunch probably isn't going to be this. There are a lot of things this lunch can be, but it almost certainly isn't this. The for old time's sake lunch. If you meet for lunch near one of your apartments, your meal might be a prelude to one more roll in the hay. You know, for old time's sake. You know, for the sake of the old times. All those old times that would be really disappointed if you didn't fool around again, you owe it to them. Those times of old. This isn't a reconciliation, and don't fool yourself into thinking this is closure. It's something in the middle. Is it even something? Perhaps, in the loosest sense of the word, something. It's not quite something, but slightly more than nothing, this. It's like a movie adaptation of your favorite novel. A theme park ride version of your favorite movie. It's a Xerox of a Xerox. A shadow of a ghost. It's gluten-free pasta, this. But at least it's pasta. The here's your stuff back lunch. What more is there to say? The world, it turns out, has continued to exist. The waters have receded. The fires turned to ash. You knew this day would come, but you didn't want to believe it. The scars have healed, the universe has cooled, the porcupine that is your cautious heart has uncurled itself, put away its quills, and continued on in whatever random direction it was headed. And a sweater has been sitting in someone else's closet, a barely there reminder of nothing much, really. You had every intention of being depressed forever, but as it turns out, there's work to be done, meals to eat, movies to see, errands to run. You meant to be in ruins permanently, your misery a monument, a gash across the cold, hard earth, but honestly, who has the time for that? Instead, you survived. Apparently, you both did, and things are shockingly okay, but a sweater has been sitting in someone else's closet. A book, perhaps, or a knitted winter cap. The memory of whatever spark you had is rusted, corroded, hardly maintained, and scarcely revisited. This was no great affair, this thing. This was no tragic heartbreak, this was just another thing that happened in a long series of things that happened. Here's your stuff back. Have a nice life.
Rufus, read by Baron Vaughn. Rufus is a noise that has many meanings. Sometimes when man-monster makes noise like, Rufus, what it means is, come here. Sometimes, Rufus, means, I am currently petting your head. Sometimes Rufus means, I am happy to see you. And sometimes it means, I am very upset. I have discerned many meanings of noise Rufus. I am very smart. Occasionally, man-monster is making noises with other man-monster, and in middle of many annoying nonsense noises, man-monster will make noise Rufus, and I will look at man-monster like, why did you make noise Rufus? And man-monster will see me looking and will laugh. I do not know why this delights man-monster so, but I am happy to delight. Man-monster makes many noises, and part of my job as companion to man-monster is to decipher noises and discern meanings. At first I did not care to discern meanings of man-monster noises, because why should I bother? I am creature with rich interior life. I should waste time trying to discern meanings of grunts and whines from man-monster? But now I see that man-monster is very unable to discern meanings of my noises, so if we are to understand each other at all, I am the one who must discern meanings. And since we live in same house, it is better for everyone if someone understands someone. So, fine. We are companions, and I discern meanings. Here is example. When man-monster is upset, man-monster makes noise like, bad dog. This is worst noise man-monster can make. Bad dog is for when universe conspires to make life miserable and one is without hope. Many times, man-monster is very frustrated at situation and makes bad dog at me, like, is my fault universe is unfair. This is very frightening for me to see man-monster agitated so when I am so small. But I know man-monster is foolish beast and does not know is not my fault for bad dog. Sometimes is my fault. Sometimes when man-monster is away, I discover little soft to play with and things get out of hand and somehow situation occurs where little soft is destroyed. This I know will not make man-monster pleased. So when man-monster returns to house, I run into other room, so Man Monster will not know it was I who destroyed Little Soft. I am in other room, minding business, when Man Monster walks in front room, makes noise like, oh no. I walk in very casual, like, what is reason for, oh no. I was in other room, no knowledge why I should be, oh no. I feel small bad for deceiving Man Monster, but no, it is for Man Monster's own good. Already Man Monster is upset because of destroyed Little Soft. If Man Monster knew Little Soft was destroyed by me, good friend to Man Monster, that would be a very bad situation. Still, Man Monster is very upset. Makes noise like, bad dog. Makes noise like, why you do? I feel bad that in this situation, maybe it really is I who is reason for Man Monster's displeasure. Maybe this time, I am bad dog. This makes me very, very regretful about situation with regards to Little Soft, because in moment, I was not thinking about Man Monster, but as soon as Little Soft was destroyed, I knew Man Monster would not like. But then I think about how I fooled Man Monster. Man Monster does not know I am reason for destroyed Little Soft, and this is very good. Man Monster does not know this time I am reason for bad dog. Man Monster thinks I am good dog, and thinking I am good dog makes Man Monster happy, so it is good that I make him think this. Maybe, for making him think this, I am good dog after all? This is a question I often ponder. Is better to be truthful, or is better to keep up appearance so that others have good thoughts of you, know they can depend? These questions too big for little creature like me. Maybe no correct answers? Man Monster and I go in morning and evening constitutionals. This is good. See neighborhood. Smell many smells. Observe other creatures. Make waste. This is important. When younger, I would make waste in-house. But truth is, this is not so pleasant, because then waste sits there with you in-house. Is better to make waste outside of house, and now I know is better. Now I make waste during morning and evening constitutional with Man Monster. Is much better this way. This is sign of big smartness, that I can learn things. I am very proud of this ability. Man Monster is not so smart, does not learn. Man Monster makes waste in-house, in special room for making waste. Man Monster thinks if closes door, I do not know he makes waste, but I know. I am very smart. Sometimes I feel like if I do not make waste, I will explode, but I know always there will be time when I can go outside and make waste later, and always this is true. Man Monster does not know to wait to go outside, but is okay. Man Monster does not know things he does not know. During constitutionals, I observe many other creatures, big and small. Some creatures have many smells, very interesting. Other creatures have fewer smells, not so interesting. Either way, observing is much pleasant experience for all creatures. I observe front of creature, then I observe behind of creature. If creature is small like me, creature can observe my behind simultaneous to me observing creature's behind. Otherwise, we take turns. Sometimes when I am observing, Man Monster pulls on constraint and makes noise like, okay, time to go. This is very unnecessary and irksome. Perhaps Man Monster thinks I am done observing? If so, is very illogical notion, because if I am done observing, I leave, and there is no reason for pulling on constraint. If there is more to observe, I will continue to observe, and so also here is no reason for pulling on constraint. But Man Monster does not understand this. Sometimes I feel like if I were to be Man Monster and Man Monster were to be creature, I would be very more diligent in regards to trying to understand desires of creature. But also there are some things Man Monster does that I am not so proficient at, like opening doors. So maybe I would not be so good at being Man Monster after all. Perhaps it is better that I am creature, and Man Monster is Man Monster. One time, during nighttime constitutional, I observe far away creature, very strange experience. This creature has no Man Monster, has no constraint. It is a large creature, brown, and it looks at me from across much area. I look at large brown creature with big wonder. Where is constraint for large brown creature? Where is man monster for large brown creature? Does large brown creature have companion? Does large brown creature have house in which for sleeping? Who opens doors for large brown creature? Who puts food in dish? I wonder if large brown creature looks at me and thinks me foolish for being constrained by man monster. Maybe large brown creature thinks there is no need for man monster. Perhaps large brown creature thinks I am very much not smart. This angers me, so I make noise at large brown creature. Large brown creature runs off, unconstrained, and man monster makes noise like, "Come on, Rufus, let's go." Next day, food and dish tastes different to me. Not bad, just different. One day, much later, during morning constitutional, I am observing creature, small like me, with white hair, smells strong, been many places. And I notice this time that man monster does not pull on constraint. Instead, man monster is making noises with other man monster attached to constraint of little white-haired creature. This other man monster is tall and skinny and smells of much body movement. Both man monsters laugh and make many jovial noises. I look up at man monster like, "Okay, I am done observing this creature now and ready to observe other situations." But man monster does not pay attention. Man monster is laughing, making very exuberant noises and sounds at tall skinny. Later, tall skinny appears at house. This is very good, because tall skinny has smells of little white-haired creature, which is very interesting to me. I jump at him and observe all smells. Tall skinny makes noise like, "Oh, hello again." And man monster makes noise like, "Rufus, Dow." Man monster and tall skinny make noises at each other and leave house through door. I try to go with, but man monster closes door before I can get out. Man monster often forgets that I cannot open door, so if he closes door when I am inside, then I must stay inside. I try to remind man monster I am still inside by making many loud noises, but man monster is distracted by tall skinny and does not come back to let me out of door. On this night, man monster does not return until very late. It's not bad thing man monster returns to house so late. Just observation. Next thing is, tall skinny appears at house many times. Sometimes tall skinny appears, and then both man monsters leave. Sometimes tall skinny stays, and both man monsters sit on big soft and look at noisy flat box and laugh. If there is one thing I have discovered about man monsters, it is that man monsters love to look at noisy flat box and laugh. Sometimes tall skinny comes over with little white-haired creature, and man monster makes noise like, "Double date, double date." Man monster looks at noisy flat box while little white-haired creature and I run from front room to other room. This is very thoughtful of man monster to spend time with tall skinny so that I can run from room to room with other creature. It occurs to me how nice. Man monster has found a companion for his companion. I know it is not always easy for man monster to have so many in house, because sometimes man monster becomes very agitated at tall skinny and much shouting occurs. Other times, they wrestle and nip at each other, and I cannot discern if he's playful or if he's angry. On one night, when man monster and tall skinny are looking at noisy flat box, little white-haired creature goes into other room and jumps into other room big soft. This is very inappropriate. I know this. I make noise at little white-haired creature to suggest, "Hey, maybe you should not be on that. Maybe man monsters will not like." I run to front room to alert man monster of situation. I make many noises to indicate, "There is creature on other room big soft." I know creatures should not be on other room big soft, only front room big soft. But man monster is unconcerned. He makes noise like, "Quy, Rufus." I look at man monster. I look at tall skinny. Both just sit on front room big soft and look at noisy flat box. I go back into other room. Little white-haired creature is burrowing into big soft. I think maybe is okay. Maybe this time creatures are allowed on big soft. I jump on big soft. Is nice. Is soft. Everywhere is smells of man monster. I lie down. Amazing feeling. Feels like I am surrounded always by embrace of man monster. feels like a house inside of house. I have very much joy, and I look over at little white-haired creature also in Big Soft, and I see disaster! Little white-haired creature has made waste on top of Big Soft. This, I know, is bad news. Firstly, I am paralyzed with fear. What to do? Alert Man Monster or no? I am companion to Man Monster, and I know I should alert of all situations inside of house, but this is news Man Monster will very not like. This is bad dog kind of news. It occurs to me, maybe if I don't alert, Man Monster will discover later, will not know who made waste on Big Soft. Maybe Man Monster will think he made waste on Big Soft and then forgot? But downside is maybe he will think I made waste on Big Soft. This is worst possible scenario. Very much bad to imagine. I realize now I must alert. I run into front room, make many loud noises. Man Monster makes noises at me like, Rufus, no! I run back into other room, and then back into front room, making noises all the way, as if to say, come! Look in this room! Man Monster makes noise like, Rufus, quiet! Tall Skinny makes noise like, Quai, Rufus! Consequently, I am very even more upset, because now Tall Skinny thinks he can make noise Rufus at me? We are not companions. I do not know this other Man Monster. For review, Tall Skinny brings other creature into my house. Tall Skinny's companion creature makes waste on my Man Monster's Big Soft. Now I am trying to alert Man Monster because I am smart, and now for this, I am considered nuisance. I am considered bad dog. Is all very, very upsetting. I am much alarmed if this is to be state of things. I keep making noise. Man Monster gets up off of front room Big Soft so that I will know he is serious. He makes noise like, Rufus! I run back into other room so that Man Monster will follow me. But instead, Man Monster closes door between rooms. This is bad. Man Monster knows I cannot open doors. At this point in situation, I am very much exasperated that Man Monster does not understand me. I work very hard to discern meanings of Man Monster noises, but Man Monster makes no effort to discern meanings of my noises. Why should this be? Things would be very easier if I could make noise to Man Monster and Man Monster would think, oh, I understand. My companion means to tell me that other creature has made waste on my Big Soft. How wonderful that I have a companion to tell me such things, and how wonderful that I can understand. Instead, I make noise, and Man Monster thinks, I do not understand. I do not like noise. Noise is bad. Surely there is no reason for companion is making noise. Surely he just makes noise because he does not know I do not like. I must scold him. That is best solution. Is exhausting. Later, I think back on this, and I feel bad. It's not Man Monster's fault. He does not understand. Man Monster cannot discern meaning. Only I can discern meaning. I am smart. Man Monster is not so smart. It's not Man Monster's fault. But now I am trapped in other room with waste of other creature. This is terrible situation. I make many noises. I scratch at door. Little white-haired creature makes noises as well. I am much pleased that little white-haired creature has now decided to contribute, but also I know all this is little white-haired creature's fault in first place, so little white-haired creature is not in clear yet as far as my book goes. Man Monster opens door. Man Monster is furious. He grabs constraint and pulls hard. He makes noise like, Rufus, what? Sometimes when he makes noise, Rufus, I know it is good, but this is not good Rufus. I am very scared of what Man Monster might do to me when so angry. But then Man Monster smells, and I see that he is observing. He goes to Big Soft. He sees waste. Makes noise like, Joe! Tall Skinny walks in. Observes waste on Big Soft. Makes noise like, oh, who did this? Man Monster makes noise like, nah, Rufus. I think Ladybug. Tall Skinny makes noise like, Ladybug? Judo? Oopsie. Now Man Monster is very upset. Oopsie? Oopsie? Tall Skinny shrugs. Relax, it's an accident. It's not a big deal. Chill out. And Man Monster makes noise like, I'm not mad about Ladybug, but
but you should be a little more sorry. Are you serious right now? You want me to clean up? Are you that big a baby? I'm not being a baby to want you to clean up after your own dog. Tall Skinny makes very serious demeanor. He makes noise like, what is really about? After this event, Tall Skinny Man Monster does not come back to house so much. Little white-haired creature does not come back to house so much. In theory, is not so bad. Is more time for me and Man Monster. More time for long constitutionals. More time for Man Monster to throw ball for me to retrieve. But Man Monster does not want to go on long constitutionals. Man Monster does not want to throw ball for me to retrieve. All Man Monster wants now is to sit on front room Big Soft and look at Noisy Flatbox. In past, Noisy Flatbox has made Man Monster much jovial. But now Man Monster is very saddened. At first, I think Man Monster is still upset about creature making waste on other room Big Soft. But upon continued reflection, this does not speak to true situation. Waste has been removed from other room Big Soft for a very long time now, and Man Monster still sleeps on other room Big Soft, so this cannot be concern. Sometimes even Man Monster allows me to sleep on other room Big Soft with Man Monster, which was never allowed before. Very clearly, Man Monster is no longer upset about soiled Big Soft. So what is reason for Man Monster to be continued upset? Is mystery. Man Monster has female Man Monster friend who sometimes comes to house, brings food for Man Monster, takes me on constitutionals. Female Man Monster is friendly, has many good smells, but is not same as Man Monster. Sometimes Man Monster and female Man Monster sit for a very long time, make many hushed noises. Female Man Monster makes noise like, "You should have a party for your birthday." Man Monster shakes head, makes noise like, "I'm not in the mood." Female Man Monster scratches Man Monster's back, makes noise like, "You will be, I promise." One night, there is big gathering of Man Monsters. At first, is fun. Everyone wants to pet. I jump up on Man Monsters and they laugh and dance with me. Many delicious foods are dropped on floor and I am able to eat them. But more and more Man Monsters begin to congregate. Soon, noise becomes unbearable. There is no space to roam. Everywhere is foreign Man Monster legs. Strange Man Monsters I do not know pick me up and pull on me. I make noise like, "Put me down," but Strange Man Monster does not comprehend. I kick and scratch and Strange Man Monster drops me. I look for main Man Monster, my Man Monster, but do not find. I think, "Oh, he is gone forever," and get very sad and scared. I look for female Man Monster, companion to Man Monster, but do not find. I even look for Tall Skinny Man Monster, but do not find. Is this my life now? Forever? In crowded house, surrounded by strange Man Monsters I do not know? I become quite certain that this is my life now, forever. Now, when I am thinking about this, terrible on top of terrible thing happens. I make waste in house. This is very unlikely event to occur because I am not one to make waste in house. Everyone knows this about me, but is overwhelming. So many Man Monsters. When it is happening, I truly do not know it. I look down and see waste and I think, "Who made this waste in house?" Then I know, I made waste in house. One of Man Monster's Man Monster friends sees me and shouts many noises. Man Monster runs over, "Oh, no, 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 why?" I am very relieved that Man Monster is not, as it turns out, gone forever. But also at same time, I am very ashamed. Man Monster grabs constraint and pulls me to door. Man Monster opens door and takes me outside, like maybe I want to make waste again. I do not. Waste already made. This is very obvious. Man Monster goes back inside, closes door. I scratch at door, so Man Monster will remember that I cannot open door. So that Man Monster will come back and open door for me, but door does not open. I look up at sky. I hear howling of distant creature. I think about little white-haired creature who made waste in house and then did not come back to house. I think about how after little white-haired creature made waste, Tall Skinny did not come back to house. I wonder where they went. Is this where now I must go? I know, if so, is very appropriate, is what I deserve. Already Man Monster was very upset. Mad Monster did not also need for Greatest Companion to make waste in-house. This is betrayal at worst possible time. Now I truly know what it means to be reason for bad dog. I think about large brown creature who had no Mad Monster companion and no house. When I saw before, from across much distance,